I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Billboard's Soul Sisters podcast. We're coming at you from the Chord Club tonight with an exciting new artist whose first album is just coming out now. I had the fortune of seeing her perform live last month to a packed house in New York. She blew me away. She blew away everyone in the room. It was quite an experience, so I knew we had to have her here. Her band is pretty rad, too. She has a very interesting story, so we're excited to get to know her better tonight. She is Victoria Reed. Welcome, Victoria.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Our honor. First things first, did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did.
And yeah. Verdict? Yeah. And on the game, yeah. On the performances?
The performance was nice. I think it's hard because the bar is set so high. You're just so expecting high. Like so much oomph.
Yes.
You know? And it's just one of those things where it's like, unless you see like a nipple or something.
Yeah.
I love Beyonce.
I think we got that oomph last night.
Yeah,
It came.
And it did not come with Coldplay. God bless
absolutely
them.
Absolutely not. And it was, right, God bless them. They did great. But when Formation came out the night before, and then they actually did Formation
on the field.
Full on with I don't know how many people dancing that number.
I think I messed up. I didn't watch the video the day before. I saw it and then something happened and I didn't watch it. Also, I basically missed the entire Coldplay part of it because I was in the kitchen trying to get water to boil for whatever. And so I got there like right as Beyonce was coming on. So I didn't get impact of the juxtaposition.
Yeah, the juxtaposition helps, I think.
I don't know.
That's good. It's good to have different opinions about this.
Yeah. I was blown away.
You were. And you tweeted about it.
I did.
You tried to counterbalance the snark on Twitter.
What did you tweet?
Well, there wasn't really... I didn't see much snark about Beyonce, Bruno. I thought there was a lot of snark about Chris.
Yes. No, that's true.
But I thought that people were in for Beyonce, Bruno. And
the
head-to-head, the West Side Story kind of showdown dancing where they were just looking directly into the camera. Oh, my God.
It was great.
It was pretty great.
It was great. Also, like, you know, I was at a party. Like, the volume wasn't really loud enough.
There were
like
so many factors.
A smaller TV. Sure. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. What about Gaga?
I missed it. Oh, we were late.
I'm all in.
I know. I saw, like, a snippet of it when I got home on some kind of newscast. And, it looked awesome.
She rocked it.
Yeah.
She's doing
the proud,
that's
the word, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think this Beyonce moment is going to ride on for?
I think forever.
Forever?
I think it's only going to build.
To stay, I do too.
I'm really impressed that it's still at this point. It's just like a permanent peak for her.
I think we were ready for this person to come in and step into that role of biggest star in the world, and she has the talent.
That's true.
She has the talent. She has the entourage. She has the family. The everything.
And there's just like an intensity there that's just.
And she's a crazy, crazy talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's fantastic. And I watched that video today, and I was just like, "All right, I'm pumped up."
I love that video. I love the song. I'm so down.
The highlight for me was the picture of Apple Martin and Blue Ivy holding hands.
Oh,
which I know like could be nauseating. You could go either way on it. I'm deciding to love it.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, what's that?
Gwyneth and Chris's son Apple
yeah.
was like holding hands with Blue leading her to the Super Bowl.
Aww.
Oh, just cute. Blue's cute.
She is really yeah. cute.
That's anyway. Really cute. Oh, I did see that.
I saw that.
You saw it?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, oh, yeah, you know. It didn't have the same impact on you.
No.
Okay.
Babies.
Meh. Yeah,
no. Famous babies.
Famous babies.
No,
they don't
kidding.
Do it. Animals
no,
and babies. I'm not.
Whoa.
I know.
Animals.
We should do a whole podcast on that someday.
That's a whole faction of.
I know. I'm going to alienate a lot of people with that.
Well,
I like
anyway.
It.
Anyway.
Controversial podcast already.
Super controversial.
Yeah. So you're from Detroit. Does that mean you had to be a big football fan growing up?
I mean, no. Okay. I was a big hockey fan.
Oh, were you?
I still am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were your parents big hockey fans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad, huge hockey fan. We would go to all the games.
Oh,
my
really?
Dad would like play the national anthem and we'd go to the playoff games and just get like, I mean, I think the most pumped up I've ever, like, other than the Beyonce video yesterday, the most pumped up I've ever been was when I was like, I must have been like 11 years old and the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup. And I was just like, I've never felt an intensity like that.
Wow. So we should tell the audience also, your dad was playing the saxophone.
Yeah.
Playing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Solo. He would do.
Yeah. And he also did this thing at one point during the playoffs one year where he played like a whole pre-show thing before each game and he would skate around and play the saxophone.
What?
Or like flags. It was crazy.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder where that fares in the, on the spectrum of crazy things that you were a part of and witness to when you were yeah. growing up.
I mean,
because that's pretty wild.
You're like, that's the least of it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty tame.
All right. Your dad, this is the most important thing I need to know. Aldo Reed is not the name he was born with, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because that would have been amazing yeah. if he was given that name and
I
then
know.
There's only one thing he could become with a name like that would be a saxophone player.
Right.
Okay. But that's not the, it's not the case.
Yeah. Not the case.
Okay.
Yeah. He, I don't know when he changed it, but I think he just started going by, I don't know, someone started calling him that.
Yeah.
And then it stuck. And I don't know. I mean, my last name is legally Reed.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I inherited the fake name.
But that wasn't his real last name either?
No.
That's so great.
I know. It's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Full switcheroo.
What was his given name?
The given name, well, it's kind of complicated. There's
okay.
there's a lot of names. A lot of names going around in this family.
Yeah.
There's a Greek name. There's Theodoropoulos. Super Greek. And then there's, I don't even know if it's Finnish, and there's Cartmel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was the first and last name.
No, his first name was Tommy.
Oh.
Thomas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he became Alto Reed.
Yeah.
When he became a saxophonist. And when did he join the Bob Seger band?
Maybe early 70s or late 60s.
Okay.
Yeah. Very early on.
So you were born into that world.
Yeah.
That must have been crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy, but it's, you know, it's also one of those things where when you grow up in a certain situation, it's all you know.
Yeah.
So you're just like, I mean, you start to catch on at a certain point where you're like, oh, this is pretty different than like, most of your friends. You're like, what does your dad do? They're like, I don't know. You know,
he leaves in the morning, comes
yeah.
back at night.
Yeah.
Opposite for you.
Yeah. But, you know, I was also really fortunate because in some way, because when I was born, it was right around a time that they had taken basically 10 years off from touring. So the first 6 years of my life, he was just around. And I knew what he did and we'd hear the songs on the radio and like, I got it. But it wasn't until I was six that I first went to a show and was like, oh.
Other right. people think this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
remember that experience? What show was that?
It was in Detroit. Well, I just remember going to the rehearsals. They had the rehearsals at the State Theater there, which is now the Fillmore. So it's a pretty big theater. And I'm like, oh, wow, like this is cool. And I was thinking that's what the show was going to be. And then the show was at like the Palace of Auburn Hills or something, which is a giant, you know, giant stadium. Or do you call that a stadium? I don't know. What do you? I don't know what the technical word is.
Probably.
Arena?
Sounds right.
Arena.
Arena. Okay.
Gary's looking at me. Yeah, so I went to that show and I was just like, oh man, this is crazy. I mean, you know, when you're little, you're 6 years old, you're like, yeah, this is pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. I saw a video on YouTube of your dad playing at some point in the 80s, yeah, and it was the old time rock and roll where he has that big solo.
Uh-huh.
And like, he's not just in the band, he was like a boss. Like when that moment comes, he's like out there running back and forth. That was like a huge moment in the show, oh, yeah, featuring, yeah, him.
Yeah, he's very present.
Yeah, a showman
in the band. Yeah, totally. I mean, he used to. I think before Britney Spears was doing it, he would attach himself to the ceiling with wires and fly and play the saxophone.
Whoa!
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I never got to see that. He stopped doing that, I guess, in like the '70s or the '80s. Yeah. So, you know,
did he have like one near accident?
No. Well, like, he actually started doing it because before that he would, I guess, he would go out on his roadie's shoulders at some point in the show, or like he had a thing where he'd always like show up in the back of the arena or something like that. And at one point he was going out and doing solos on the shoulders of his tech, and some woman, I guess he was wearing a scarf because he loves scarves, and
as most
maybe like
do,
the one that you were wearing now. And someone grabbed his scarf and like kind of choked him, and he was like, oh, I can't really go into the crowd anymore, but I still want to do something. So then he would like stand on the amplifiers, and then at some point someone designed like a Peter Pan harness for him, and he started flying.
That is awesome. Is that something that you would like to eventually work up to in your shows? Do you have that same instinct?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Goals.
Yeah, goals.
Goals. But he also sang, which I didn't realize. Or was it just one song? I mean,
he does everything. You know, he plays tambourine. He plays a big timpani drum at one point. He plays guitar. Yeah,
so
utility
how,
guy.
How much were you around that? So you would go, you went to your first show when you were 6 years old.
Yeah.
Then was it a continual thing that you were always there? Were you backstage? How much was that a part of your life?
You know, it was in and out from there because they weren't touring as heavily as they were back in the day. But when they were on tour, we would go to, we were missing a lot of school. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
I once fell asleep atop an amplifier on the side of the stage. That's, I guess, how regular right. of a thing it was. I was just like, ugh. I remember being really bummed because it was the LA show. And that was like my first time going to LA. And I'm like, I'm going to meet JTT, Jonathan Taylor
oh
Thomas.
My God.
And I was so mad at myself. Like after the show, I'm like, oh my, I don't know why I just assumed that he would be there, you know, because yeah. of course we're in Hollywood. He's going to, I don't know, he attends every show or whatever I was thinking. But I woke up and I was just pissed. I'm like, how did you let me fall asleep?
Oh no.
And my That's sister amazing. Probably like lied to me or something and told me he was there.
I remember every time I used to come to New York when I was a kid, uh-huh. I thought we were going to see Luke Perry, even though he like obviously lived in LA and didn't, why would he just be walking yeah. around the streets of New York and why would I run into him?
Similar
but I would
line
prepare.
JTT we're talking?
Well,
or
for
Luke
me,
Perry.
It was Luke Perry. Okay. I mean, I also love JTT, but okay. I'm saying my version of that was right. like working up in my mind what I was going to say to Luke when I saw him yeah. in New York.
You're like, of course.
yeah.
I try, like, wore the coolest six-year-old outfit you could possibly wear. Right. That
so children. You're there, you're around that growing up.
Yeah.
What was your feeling at that point? Were you saying to yourself, this is what I want, like, this is rad, or... like this is wild. I need some quiet. I need to be in my bed. What was your feeling? Do you remember?
I mean, I loved
that evolving.
It. No, I mean, I loved everything about it. You know, it's the most fun thing in the world, and it's just so thrilling. You're in those, you know, those backstages and those arenas, and it's just like just such an amazing energy. You know, and I think even before that, you know, my sister and I, we both sang a lot and wrote songs at a very young age. I probably started doing it because she did it. And I was like, oh, that sure garners a lot of attention. I can write a song. So, yeah, we would sing and write songs from a really young age. And I don't know if maybe somewhere it was like imprinted upon our, you know, our brains just over like family dinners where my parents would talk about, you know, Bob and the music yeah. industry and songwriting.
What did your
or whatever,
mom do? What was she doing in this time?
So initially she was a Playboy bunny.
Okay.
But stopped that.
Like in what era?
In the 80s. In the 80s, yeah.
Okay.
In Miami. And that's how her and my dad met. Somehow.
Amazing.
That's around.
Do you know
time
more
met.
Details about how they met?
Well, kind of, but I.
No. You don't know what you should share.
I mean,
leave it to the
no. I just found out a funny detail about my best friend now, and her father, who introduced them on the docks of their boats, basically, in Miami. And whatever, there was a funny detail that I'll keep to myself. Okay. That's why I'm laughing.
That's so great.
I don't know, like, anything else weird. It's it's fine.
It's probably for the best.
Yeah.
But was she doing that when you were growing up at all, or she
no,
quit she when
was,
she had
yeah,
you guys?
She was around, you know. She, yeah.
She, is she a creative she did a lot. Person also?
Yeah, or? She. Yeah. I mean, she went to art school, so she's an artist. She was a model. Okay. She was an actress.
So you were getting it from both sides.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And, you know, she managed the household in a big way.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when my dad had his solo pursuits then after the Seeger thing, she helped out a lot with that. So
okay.
She was very involved in the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know how they individually felt about you pursuing the music thing. Like for your dad, did your dad used to warn you about it or try to steer you away from it?
No, not really. They
what about
they
in your dating life?
It.
I bet he said, don't date musicians.
You know, he never said that.
No? Okay.
He really didn't. And I guess, you know, he didn't, and now I am. So now I'm marrying one.
So it's better off.
Yeah, it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were both really, they always encouraged it. You know, anytime I wrote a new song or anything, it was just like, they were just so thrilled. You know, they loved it. They never pushed us to do anything, which, you know, is one of those things where you're like, why didn't you make me learn an instrument? Or like, why did you let me quit piano?
And they did that happened. So you didn't really learn an instrument growing up.
They, you know, I took piano lessons for a very short period of time, and then I lost interest, I guess. And they were just like, fine.
Did he try to teach you sax?
No. I don't even think I've ever held a sax.
Really?
I've like maybe like touched one.
But weird. You would
I should maybe try.
You would write though at a young age and share it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I couldn't wait to share it. Just sing a cappella. Yeah. And I mean, I had melodies and everything, you know. And then starting, I guess, around middle school, with both my sister and I, my parents would kind of like hook us up with a producer or whatever, or someone just at the house, you know, one night that there's this awesome producer, Tim Mitchell, who came over one night and had a guitar. And I just kind of started singing. And for the first time, he kind of put, you know, guitar to my music, to my songs. And we just, my dad like set up a little recording rig in our great room that night. And we just like, that was the first time I ever recorded. That was when I was like 12. And then I did a little bit in Miami there with him. But, you know, it's like you're 12 and your tastes are changing so much. Like on one hand, you're like, you were just like knee deep into the Spice Girls like a few years before that. And then like,
yeah, I was going to ask, like, what were you emulating at that
right.
point?
I don't know. Because then you're like, oh, Nirvana. You know what I mean? Right. You're like, well, wait a minute here.
You're like a sponge at that point.
Yeah, totally.
So what did your stuff sound like at 12?
I mean, they were just acoustic tracks, so it's kind of hard to pin down.
Yeah. Like, what were the songs about? What was your source material from life?
I guess I was, like, a really emo, like, 11-year-old or 12-year-old. I don't know. Like, the first song we ever recorded was called Moving On. It was just about, like, the transience of things, I guess. It was just, like...
Little tinges of philosophy coming in.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. It was basically just about how, you know, and not in a morbid kind of way, but about how I sat there and I realized how everything that I was surrounded by was going to be gone at some point one day, which sounds really sad. But then it was like okay, I'm just moving on. You know,
okay,
so that was my resolve about it.
Were you like a really pensive kid?
Yeah, I guess.
Brooding, would you say?
My family would probably describe me as that. No.
Okay.
No, I've always been pretty, like, light and silly.
Right.
You know?
You're processing things, but you're not
pensive
getting weighed
down by them. Pensive in, like, a silly kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, that came later.
Right. We'll get to that. So, but tell us about Miami.
Miami. Yeah, so I grew up kind of back and forth between Detroit and Miami. Mostly in Detroit, but...
Why Miami?
My parents liked it.
Okay.
They lived there, so... They lived there, yeah.
Okay.
They lived there before I was born. Like, my sister was born there. They lived there for years. And we always kind of had a place there. We would go sometimes, like, once a month just to escape Detroit winters.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they have a lot of really close friends there still, so... Yeah, Miami. I love Miami. I feel like it's sometimes hard for me to, when people ask where I'm from, I just say Detroit because it doesn't quite capture the whole thing. It's like I have like the Detroit, like, down home Midwestern
hockey
vibe,
going,
hockey right. vibe, right? But then I also have like the spicy I'm a little bit spicy. Yeah. Yeah. I am, but I feel like I got that from Miami. Like when I'm in Miami and I go all the time still, I feel very much in my element. So
yeah,
it
it's
influenced
a nice balance.
Me. Yeah.
I have a really good friend whose fiance is from Miami and she keeps telling me that they're probably going to move there eventually. And I give her a lot of shit for it because I have a stereotype of Miami in my head and I don't think I've really spent much time there. I don't know if I've actually been to Miami. Maybe I've only been to...
You would know, I feel like.
Yeah, I think I would know. Yeah. Well, there's like Miami from movies that I'm probably mistaking for memories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's... And what's happened to Miami in the past like 5 years is really cool. There's like an emerging... I think Art Basel, you know, the the art festival... started, I don't know when they started doing it down there.
Is it
I started
recently?
Going like
that it was I didn't
I don't know
that.
How long it's been. I started attending when I was like in high school attending like the events, you know, so that wasn't that long ago, but it just recently in the past few years it's just blown up and now entire neighborhoods are kind of coming up around it and there's this whole other element to Miami that wasn't fully developed there before.
Scene.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, you think like the Miami Vice like right. cheesy or like some kind of like I don't know, like rap music video.
Right.
scene There's which like it, that's there. Oh, that's well, yeah. yeah. I mean,
right.
that's there.
That's
very very
Whatever
very much
you
there.
Want to look for,
but there's also
find.
Other really cool scenes that you know, I've been able to seek out. And it's I think it's also one of those things where it's like if you have family there or really good family friends, you know, your experience of that place is going to be so different.
Yeah. So you went down there and you recorded how much stuff?
I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what was the plan for those?
So I was working with this producer. So he produced Shakira. He worked with Gloria Estefan.
Oh, wow.
So like he was like, you know, pretty heavy in the scene and
very
would,
Miami.
Yeah, very Miami, right?
But it was this like someone that your dad knew or how did this guy come
yeah,
into your life?
Yeah, I don't know how my parents met him, but at one point he toured with Seeger. He played guitar with him. So yeah, he was just always kind of around, a really awesome guy. But he started just producing tracks and then I would put my songs to them or I would present a song to him and he would build a track.
How was that? Because if I had been in the recording studio at 14, I would have been just gleeful out of my mind. I mean, because you had been around it all of these years, was it a little bit less of a big moment?
I mean, excited. I was definitely excited. I think, you know, I don't know. It wasn't like there was a lot of pressure or anything either. I think part of it was really just trying to find, like, I was always like a little bit embarrassed of the songs for some reason. I don't know why. I think I just wasn't very confident about it. And also like I remember at one point Tim asked me to make him a playlist of like songs that I was really into. And I put like all this like heavy stuff on there, like thinking
Nirvana.
Like, yeah, right. Even though I totally was into other things too, I just like maybe wanted to show him like, no, I'm also a little bit emo.
Yeah.
Like I put like Brand New on there or something. And he was like, oh no, I feel like I've been making these tracks in a completely different, because I don't know, he was thinking like 13-year-old girl and they were cool. I mean, they were awesome tracks, but I think maybe that's why it never quite stuck for me is, you know, I kind of grew out of that sound and I don't know.
So what was he trying to do with those songs? Was it like get them to,
I don't know,
radio or get them to Disney Channel?
And that was sort of more on you to say, okay, I have these tracks. And
yeah, I don't really know what the plan was. Mm. There was never I don't know if there was a plan.
Did anyone hear them, to your knowledge? You just kind of had them.
I played them
home.
For some people, but I don't know. Like I said, I kind of lost interest.
Yeah. Do they still exist?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Maybe for like your 20th album, that can be like bonus tracks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So then did it sort of follow from around that time, let's say 14?
Yeah.
That you were doing that recording? Through college? I mean, then take us through the evolution from the point where you're recording these songs and you sort of get disillusioned.
Yeah.
Back into the groove.
Well, we moved to Miami to kind of pursue that. And then a number of different things happened and we ended up moving back to Detroit. And then I think I was just like a full-fledged high schooler. You know what I mean? I was like, there really wasn't one period in my life where I wasn't singing and writing songs personally.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really actively pursuing anything at that point in high school. And then I got to college and, you know, I toyed around at one point with the idea of like maybe like joining a Craigslist band. And there must have been like, I apologize. Because there were probably like three people that I just completely stood up. It was just like, I don't know. I don't want to sing these weird songs. Like, because part of it was, you know, I really wanted to sing my songs. I really wanted to, I had so many, you know, when you have like, I mean, I don't know how many I had, dozens, if not, you know, whatever. You know, you want to express those, and then you're like, okay, I could join this band and like sing these covers that they play or whatever. I don't know. And I think my friends that were musicians, I just felt like they're so cool. They don't want to play my like nerdy little songs, you know?
It's intimidating.
Yeah. And I think there's something about when you don't play an instrument and you're just like American Idol, like, all right, let me sing you a little ditty right here. It's very like. It is kind
it's
of
personal.
Embarrassing.
I mean, it's
for me, it was. I don't know, and I'm also like, as a vocalist, I never felt like I was an American Idol type vocalist. Like I should, you know, go audition and do that because, for me, it was just more about the songs, kind of. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I loved to sing, but yeah. And then I always had a guitar, though. Always had a guitar laying around. And at one point, I was like, you know what? This is stupid. Like I need to do something. So I was like, all right, maybe I'll just like build some tracks on GarageBand. So I made this one song on GarageBand that was like kind of like 070 sounding. I was like, all right, that's pretty cool. And then I'm like, maybe I should do more. And then that software is like pretty limited. So I then was like, oh, maybe I should, you know, upgrade. And I got Ableton Live, which I don't know if you know about it, but it's like pretty intense. Mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
It was very difficult for me to learn. And at that point, I was just like, okay, I'm just going to learn guitar. It's like, what? Come on. Whatever.
Like, that would be easier.
It's really like a funny backwards impetus, you know?
Exactly.
Like, screw this technology. I'm going back to the guitar.
Yeah, and I'm like pretty good with technology, but I was just like, I don't know.
That's a lot.
And then like to perform these songs, I'm going to have to like press play on a track. And I'm like, I just want to start like doing this, you know?
Yeah. So when was this?
This was when I was about 20 or 21.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and so then I picked up the guitar and I learned. My dad had taught me. It seemed like everyone that ever taught me anything, like my dad and like funny boyfriends along the way, would like teach me a G chord. So I knew G, you know, and I kind of went from there. I learned a Seeger song first because my dad had taught me some of those chords.
That's awesome. Which one?
Still the same. Okay. Yeah, and then maybe like a few Fiona Apple tunes and things like that. And
I
then
feel like Fiona would be hard. No?
Yeah, well, I like altered them. Okay. I like dumbed them down a lot. Exactly. Yeah, they were. I dumbed them down.
How did you learn?
Just the internet. Yeah, I just, I would look up, you know, chord shapes and figure it out. I took a few lessons with a friend of mine at one point, but I was just so like just right off the bat, I think before I could barely even play guitar, I started writing songs on the guitar. You know, I could really barely even play, but it was just such a liberating feeling to be like, oh my God, I can finally accompany myself, that I just went nuts with it. I mean, I
was. Do you have a roommate that you are bombarding with new material?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, it's funny because in my bedroom in Wicker Park in Chicago at the time, there was like, I would play in my bedroom and I would always have the window open. I'm a windows open kind of person, kind of, I guess. Is that a thing?
I'm thinking about that. Like, what else would that imply? That like a nice open. Way to describe somebody in like an abstract
I
way.
I love having the window open. It just feels like, it brings more life in the room. Mm-hmm. And there was my neighbor across the way. And at one point I noticed that he was like sitting there listening to me. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And they're like, no, we love it. No, yeah, keep playing.
Your nice. First fan.
Yeah, I know. It really felt like my first fan. But so very, I probably had been learning to play guitar for about 2-3 weeks. And I started doing open mics. I was just like, dude, get me.
Brave.
Get me so out bold. There.
Oh my They've, God.
I mean, I can't even imagine what was going through these people's heads that were listening to me. They were probably just like, what?
Or your head. Can you like go back and channel that feeling of bravery? And I mean, because
I was just psyched. I was so psyched to be doing it.
You're like, I can play and sing.
Yeah.
I mean, and learning guitar so quickly and having the balls to play for yourself in front of people.
I guess I was a little
sing.
Bit crazy.
I mean, but it worked out. I mean, how did it go right off the bat?
It went great. I mean, you know, open mics are awesome. And I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but in Chicago, there were a few that I go to and everyone was really cool and everyone's really supportive, you know.
Where'd you go to school?
To DePaul.
Okay.
Yeah. And everyone was really supportive and it, you know, it's a really good place to kind of like test out your material or whatever. So I was doing that and also simultaneously recording GarageBand demos in my bedroom that I would just like slap a whole ton of reverb on and just like make them sound like super lo-fi because I couldn't get them to be hi-fi.
Yeah.
So I had like my little rig that was, I mean, incredibly jerry-rigged, like a microphone like tied with a rubber band to like a broomstick, like it's tied to the wall or, you know, something crazy. But I was just, I started recording these little songs.
Who knew about all this at that point? Were you open about the fact that you were now going for it or did you?
Yeah. I mean, I started sharing them on Facebook right away. Which luckily I was doing that because my now manager had discovered one of them on Facebook and invited me to New York. And that's kind of how everything took off.
We're not going to go there yet. I want to talk about the philosophy thing.
Yeah.
Because while you were doing all this, you were also a philosophy major.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, I always remember thinking the philosophy majors at my school were the smartest and least motivated people that I knew in college, you know, like they were brilliant and they were really devoted to that subject and to thinking about it. But you could also feel like they might not have a job for a long time after school.
It's like it felt incredibly irresponsible to be like, okay, I'm going to study philosophy. But, you know, I was doing it. It was just a very personal mission, you know, and I kind of did it thinking like, well, I'm going to do music eventually anyway. So while I'm here in college, I might as well bide my time doing something that interests me, which is a very expensive way to bide your time.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, ideally, that's what you should be able to do in college.
Yeah.
And I mean about the people that I was thinking about that they weren't going to get a job because they weren't going to try to get a job, like regardless of the fact that you can't even really get a job in philosophy right after college.
Yeah.
But were you interested in that before you went to college or?
I guess I was always a little bit philosophical just by nature.
Right.
And I took a philosophy class my first quarter at DePaul and I was just like, yeah, that's for me. You know?
Yeah.
I was hooked.
Yeah. Anyone in particular?
So
like what was getting you jazzed up?
You know, here's the thing. And I don't know if, I think there are also other types of philosophy majors that are like even so extra lazy and so like just involved in your own personal mission that you're like, I really wouldn't even hook on to like certain figures as much as I would just the ideas themselves and just like build my, like whatever my little master theory was going to be. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that I had studied some philosophy because I remember trying to teach myself a little bit after college.
Yeah.
And like I bought Being and Nothingness and my coworker and I were trying to like read it on our lunch breaks
it's
and figure
weird,
it out
right?
together. And we were like, we'll never wrap our minds around this on our own.
Yeah, you know, without having a guide there, it's pretty like you open up the book, you're just like, oh, what?
Yeah,
come
it's
on,
hard. It's dense,
really. You know,
so you were enjoying it for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like full throttle. And it is that sort of thing where like you don't even show up to your other classes. Like you're so lazy. You're just like, whatever. I don't care. You're like failing out of other classes, like dropping classes left and right. But like philosophy,
but I'm thinking
straight
about
A's.
The major issues of existence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I got super intense into it. I was doing an independent study with the head of the philosophy department at one point. Like I was.
Oh, so you really
it was
were.
Just weird what because I think on? Like, I don't know. There's something that happens where, you know, you feel smart like when you're little maybe, and then something happens along the way where you start concerning yourself with things other than grades and you're like, oh, I'm maybe not smart, you know? And then I got into philosophy and I was like, wait a minute here. And like, I don't know, like my professors kind of would egg me on a little bit, and all of a sudden I just felt like, I don't know, I'm really good at thinking. I don't know, I got really good at it. So good at that I would like wake up in the morning and just like right away, just start just going, breaking things down.
Yeah. Was there like a particular thing you were trying to unlock or like a particular obsession?
You know, something
obsession?
Concerning just spirituality.
Yeah.
And just that link there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was simultaneously also delving pretty deep into spiritual pursuits. I was working at a spa for the spirit. At the time.
Tell us what that means.
There's this place in Chicago called the Ruby Room.
Okay.
Where it's like a typical spa, but then they also offer like energy healing and aura readings and all sorts of things. My boyfriend's mother at the time was a psychic, and I would help her. I would assist her in like her classes on developing your intuition. So I was like,
had you dabbled in that stuff before?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my parents were and still are pretty spiritual. Yeah. And pretty like open. Like we had a
but
psychic in the
religious.
Family growing up.
Yeah, or was
no,
it also
we would
religion?
We would go to church. We were Greek Orthodox.
Okay.
That's yeah.
So when you say spiritual, are you talking about that or that and
the this whole thing.
Other realm that includes psychics?
Yeah. Both.
Okay.
Yeah. They. Yeah. Just
that's interesting. So I would think that. Like some religions, like
it's like
Greek
more
Orthodox.
Exclusive.
Yeah, like right. They wouldn't you want you to go into that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they had their own little version.
Yeah,
you fair. Know. Yeah, they encountered some people along the way. I think my parents together that, like I said, like our family psychic that she ended up being that was kind of, I don't know, maybe just introduced them to certain things and, yeah.
You had a family psychic.
Yeah.
That you would go to together.
I mean, we wouldn't like get formal readings. My parents would get readings from her. My sister and I didn't really when we were younger, but she lived in Colorado. And, yeah, whenever we were in Colorado, we'd go to shows, or whatever out there. And then we'd, you know, always get together with Zaina and just kind of talk about some deep shit.
Yeah.
Sorry, am I allowed to say that?
Yes, yeah. You are.
Okay.
I don't do the psychic thing, and I 100% admit it's because I'm scared.
Yeah. Well, you
like,
know what?
I don't want to open that door.
So. Well, what I would say about that is that, you know, you shouldn't just go to any psychic because that's, you're really kind of like putting a lot in someone's hands there. And I mean, not to get too trippy on you.
No, let's
but,
do it. Let's go there.
What I've learned is just that there's, you know, you can access that kind of psychic information at different levels and levels that are like kind of murky and then levels that are really like angelic and pure.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never know who you're going to get. And so when you're like, what's my future? What does my future hold?
The biggest question you can ask, right?
Yeah. I mean, the psychic that I would assist, she would say that, you know, you should never tell someone what's in their future because you're basically like cursing someone when you say that. And there's always an element of free will. So you can't really tell someone what their future holds.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone...
Or you're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
So with the psychics that you enjoy or the family psychic, what kind of readings is she giving then? If it's not...
Was she a family member or a psychic
she was just
for the family?
A psychic for the family.
Okay. It's like family it's a doctor.
Yeah. You know, just insight. She also was an astrologist.
Okay.
Astrologer. She would just offer insights into like what particular energies you could capitalize on at the moment, or things, you know, just offer deeper insights into mm-hmm. things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a therapist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I read Lena Dunham's book recently,
yeah,
and she had it at the beginning of one of her chapters. I'm going to misquote it, but she said something like, quoting her mom, who said, "Why spend thousands of dollars on therapy every year when you can just spend $100 and see a psychic once?"
Yeah.
You know?
That's funny.
And because there's something, there's a weight to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love getting a good reading, but I don't do it often. I'll do it every, you know,
yeah,
once a year or something.
Are you still religious? Do you still go to church, or have you kept any of that with you?
No, I don't really go to church. I visit a lot of churches when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
Whatever. I love churches, but I don't go to church.
Yeah.
I'm
have you kept that also? I mean, that faith.
The faith. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty spiritual.
Yeah.
Person, but that just sounds so lame, you know. But whatever.
No,
it's a big part of my life and how I interpret my life, you know.
I mean, and it sounds like it almost all of the elements in such a nice sort of neat way have led to even where we are today, but but especially speaking in where we're at right now, and the story is trying music, then really trying to explore yourself, explore your mind, explore the realms of spirituality. I mean,
it all feeds into the art that you end up making.
Oh yeah.
Totally. Like, what's the recipe that created this?
Right.
Is why I'm like prodding about the spirituality thing. It's just interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I was simultaneously going deep into spirituality, deep into philosophy, just like throwing caution to the wind, like, you know, it's almost like you go on some sort of trip a little bit where you're just like, I'm the smartest person in the world. Mm-hmm. I am like, I'm so
tapped. That's what college is about.
I'm so tapped into like something spiritually, you know, it's funny. And then, at a certain point, I kind of had a little bit of a ground dropping out moment.
Yeah.
What was that moment
about? You know, I went too far, you know. It was just like, I was so
trapped.
I was so intense. Well, no, I think what happens is, you know, when you're going deep into spirituality or experiencing, you know, things that are a little bit, I keep using the word intense, but yeah, I guess intense. And then when you're deep into philosophy, you're trying to process it from your intellect, which is what I thought maybe I could do. I thought like, okay, maybe, you know, like I was very interested in the idea of combining Eastern philosophy and Western philosophy and seeing how the two met. And I felt like maybe I could somehow access all this stuff in an intellectual way. And you can't. You just can't. And it's not because it's nonsensical. It's because it's a feeling. You know what I mean? It's like you can't think a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And boy, once you like realize that, it's, you have a moment, you know,
did you feel depressed or did it make you anxious? Like, what was that?
I just felt very lost.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you hear about what happens to people when they have an existential crisis. Yeah. I don't use the word lightly because like people are like, yeah, that happens to me. If I have one a day, I'm like, no.
You're like, no, I actually had
understand.
One.
Yeah, it was really scary.
Yeah.
It was really, really scary. And for a while there, I was really just kind of paralyzed in fear.
Did you leave school?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, before you...
Well,
left.
I was in school at the time, and I was doing this independent study, which was very
intense.
It was
weighty.
It was a lot. Doing this independent study, and I left one day because I just had this big moment, and I came to that professor the next time, and I was like, "Listen, I can't do this. I can't do it anymore. I'll lose my mind," you know, and. He's like, yeah, no, I get it. You know, that happens. And he was really cool and supportive. I think in a lot of ways, he almost maybe even felt like, oh, shoot, I pushed her too far. Because we were going pretty far.
So it's like the whiplash of philosophy students.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. And you hear, you know, I honestly, I've talked to other philosophy students or people who are ex-philosophy majors. And they're just like, they should warn you that it's not, you know, it's pretty.
If you go deep, it's going to be
hard. It's, you know, it's, you should proceed with caution, kind of.
Yeah.
I know that sounds so ridiculous. And I'm sure that, I mean, there's millions of people that study philosophy and they don't have that issue. But yeah, for whatever reason I did, and it was really scary, but I got a whole album's worth of songs out of it. I feel like I got a lifetime worth of
Is that what this album is about?
Talk about a rich place to draw from.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, and it sounds so pitiful. Like, part of me is like, oh, let's sing about my struggles, my intense struggles. Like, well, actually, I've had it. Things have been pretty all right, you know. And sometimes you think about, I don't know, just your own little like psychological hangups, and you're like, oh, God, get over it. What's the big deal? Like, oh, this poor girl had an existential crisis. It's such a first world problem. You know what I
but
mean?
It's so but not how your album comes off, and it's not what well, you put into it, which is beautifully done. But the other thing that I thought was interesting from just listening to a little sneak peek of the album, which I guess we'll get into a little bit. We know about the spirituality and this existential crisis, all of these ideas, these big ideas, but a lot of the songs and the themes on the album are actually about what a lot of people make music about. And it's sort of a more lighthearted, even though it can be tremendously impactful and hard and, you know, depressing and all of those things, but it's heartache. And so I'm curious what the intersection was at that point. So you're in college, you're going through this very intense study of philosophy, but do you also have a boyfriend?
Yeah, you're
and
still.
And where does the
I
where
always
does
was
the,
dating.
Where does the writing happen in terms of, so you're dating this guy, you're studying this stuff. What is the writing? What's the sort of breakdown of, like, are you writing about heartache? Are you writing about your experience? Is it everything? What was the therapeutic element and how did that work for you?
It was just everything as it occurred to me. You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't just shut down completely. I still went about living my life when I was in that very lost period. Although I did decide to drop out of school and focus on music, but I was...
with one semester left.
Yeah. I know. It's so ridiculous. But I couldn't. I went to go take finals.
Yeah, no, you were like saving yourself.
And I was like, I can't think about this anymore, you know? But so it was just, you know, feeling things so intensely and not knowing what to do. And honestly, I know this might sound a little bit trite, but the only thing that brought me any relief was when I was writing songs or playing open mics. It just, like, for those 3 minutes, I would feel like kind of okay and kind of normal. And then, like, the second I was done, I was just like all locked up and on fire again, you know?
Did you have to remind yourself, oh, this is what I had in mind all along? Or was it always like, you're like, yeah, this feels right? Because you say throughout your life, you knew that this is what you wanted to do, but it sort of hadn't emerged and presented itself yet.
Yeah.
Were you like, oh yeah, okay, click, like this makes sense? Or were you like, what is, I mean, I guess it sounds like it took a while to sort of reconcile being involved in these studies and then wanting to leave that and put that aside. But I just wonder what was going on musically for you.
You know, I think, so a numerologist at the spa that I worked at gave me a reading for my birthday once, and he told me, like, okay, you came here to do it all, and you will, but one thing at a time. And I remember he told me that, and I was like, well, okay, I can do music, philosophy, and, like, build this oracle deck of cards that I'm working on at the same time, you know what I mean? Like, and then I'm like, okay, maybe I'll just do music and philosophy. And then I was just like, oh, okay, I don't have a choice. It's just music. It's music. And
that's a good lesson for all of us.
Yeah. One thing at a time, you know? And honest to God, the day that I made that decision is the day that my manager contacted me out of the blue. I know it sounds crazy, but
I swear.
I swear. So I was just like,
had you made the decision just to yourself or had you said it out loud?
I told my roommate at the time. I was just like, I got it.
That shit is real.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So the trains are like, the trains are going along. One train is here, you're studying philosophy. It's getting more and more intense. You're coming up to finals. You're doing this independent study and it's like all bubbling up. Simultaneously, you're learning guitar. You're writing new songs.
Yeah. Recording little demos.
Recording demos, posting them.
Yeah.
And the confluence of events happens.
Yeah.
It's just like meant to be.
Yeah. I was really pushed in a certain direction. And I guess once I, you know, went for it, the whole thing just felt so supported. It was kind of undeniable, you know? It was incredibly undeniable for me. I was just like, oh, okay, this is very obvious. And as much as I didn't at the time have the sense of perspective on it that I do now, I did have a certain sense of, okay, maybe all of this, just this really difficult period that I'm going through is for a reason, for you know, mm-hmm. which I'm a reason kind of person.
Yeah.
I'm like a meaning finding wacko if yeah. I need to be. That was the problem.
So the manager saw your music on Facebook, but how did he know to go to your page?
I had met him at a Citizen Cope concert a few years before that, just like finagling my way backstage with friends. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we always,
because I
want
to connect the
touch.
Dots for anyone listening and wondering, okay, like I put my stuff on Facebook, right. but nobody's right. seeing it. Yeah. So like, awesome. Like, let's show them exactly how it works.
And when you say Facebook, do you mean YouTube then to Facebook?
How did I post them to
and
Facebook?
And was it video or was it just the like GarageBand tracks?
I think I posted.
We're getting real nitty gritty.
It was Bandcamp. It was Bandcamp.
You put, okay, so you recorded stuff, put on Bandcamp, yeah. and then posted links to that on yeah. Facebook. Okay. Getting this straight, because it's not MySpace anymore, you know?
It's like, ain't MySpace.
It ain't MySpace.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was curious about, I wondered if you had made videos, but it was really just these recordings.
Yeah.
So you post them on Facebook, then this manager whom you had met years prior.
Years prior. And then we always kept in touch, and if he was in town with, you know, with one of his bands or something like that, he would hook us up with tickets and things. He's
so
awesome.
Some part of you a few years before that had been trying to give you this exit in case you wanted it later.
Right?
In some way.
Oh, we don't I'm have to say exit.
Not exit. No, well, exit from
misery. I'm glad that
misery.
You put it that way. Yeah, no. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Well, you were thinking ahead that you, I mean, you always knew this was a part
saying,
of it.
I have the
you
concert know what you want even when you don't know what you want
saved yes. from that day because yes. I'm just like, dude, that day was quite the day that I met him, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that changed. I think about, we went to that show because we went to this music festival, Rothbury Music Festival, with my friends, and we saw Citizen Cope there and like had such a, you know, we're like, oh man, this is amazing. Music festival was like the first one I ever went to. And then when he came into town, my friends were like, hey, that guy that we saw at that festival's in town. And we like almost didn't go, found tickets on Craigslist, and like at the last minute ended up going. Yeah.
So you really have this
come on.
Person to point to and this action that you did. I mean,
he's like my angel.
Wow.
So what year was that he reached out to you about the
2012.
Facebook? Okay.
I think. Yeah, 2012.
I want to know exactly what went down.
So can you please pull up those old messages,
right?
And he can come in here and do a live reading.
So you're like yeah. in your dorm room.
Yeah. And well, no, my apartment.
Your apartment.
I
in
somehow
Chicago.
Never lived
senior.
In a dorm.
Okay, right.
I never totally. Lived in a dorm. I'm just the type of person that always kind of weirdly skips events that you're supposed, like, I never took a driver's test, but they just gave me my license.
Oh, God.
Which I shouldn't what? Say.
Dorm, I was going to say, cool, good for you, but yeah. license, I don't know.
We do not approve of that on this podcast. Get your license, kids. Earn it.
Okay, so you're in your apartment.
Yeah.
You get a Facebook message.
Email.
An email. Okay. Yeah. And he's like, hey, Victoria.
He was like, hey, why didn't you ever tell me you write songs? Come to New York. I have a friend that has a studio, and I can help you make some great recordings.
He didn't know that you wrote songs? What did
no.
he know about you? Why were you guys keeping in touch?
I don't know. We were just, I don't know, like him
it was just
and
like
my
a friendly.
Yeah, just a friendly
oh,
thing.
That's funny.
And
okay.
my friends told me, like, right off the bat, they were like, you should tell Gary, tell him that you write songs, tell him, like, and I was just like, no, because I wasn't doing anything with it at that point. I didn't play an instrument. Like I said, I didn't have any demos that I would want to play for him. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to say anything, you know, come on, guys, no. And like, they would always say, like, you should say something to Gary, like, you should write Gary. And I'm just like, no, I'm not going to do it. And I just never, I don't know, I yeah. never did, but I didn't need to, I guess.
Right. Yeah. So then he invited you to come to New York?
Yeah.
And he said, I'll put together a little band for you and record.
Yeah, he put together an amazing band. And
are those the guys that you're playing with now?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was, how long ago was that?
3 years ago. Yeah.
But when he first contacts you and says, hey, I didn't know you write songs.
You're not ready to move past
no,
this part.
No, because it's just so, it's so dreamy. You know?
It was incredibly dreamy.
Incredible. And how long do you know, had you been trying to get these recordings out elsewhere, or were you just like, all right, Facebook, like if the universe is ready to extend that hand back to me, then they will? Or it was sort of...
I also kind of felt like in the meantime, I was playing all these open mics. I just started playing actual shows in Chicago, and I was like, you know, getting it together, you know, just kind of learning to actually be able to play the guitar, you know. And
solo shows or?
Yeah, solo shows. Every now and then I would have a guitarist accompany me or something like that. So, I mean, I guess it was less than a year that I was, you know, putting it out there. He picked up on it, and I was just like, okay, don't freak out. Yeah. Okay, this could just be just like a little thing. But then, like, of course, there was a part of me that was like, this is it. Yeah. You know?
Was your dad now like, who is this guy? Let me vet this
guy.
What's his name?
Thing. Yeah, especially, I mean, you hear about these things and the number of times that they actually are as good as they present themselves to be. I mean,
well, he just, you know, like, we had known each other for a few years at that point. Just like, he's just one of those people that he's a helper, man. Like, he just helps out anyone. And I'm not just saying this because he is probably listening, but he helps out, you know, he helps people out. I had, like, one of my friends who was a fashion designer, he would, like, connect him with someone. He just, like, he's a connector. Like, he's really good at I don't know,
really
just
great.
Hooking it up, and he's incredibly generous, and I just knew he was an awesome guy, you know? So I there was no hesitation. I think maybe my parents were like, oh, okay, Victoria sounds nice, you know, like, don't get yourself in any trouble.
Right.
But then I remember I went, and we just had one day where we recorded two songs, and I sent them to my dad, and he was like, Victoria, who's that producer? He's like, stick with that producer. He's awesome. Like, okay. Like, I think he was very shocked. He didn't think that it was going to be, you know, I don't know what he was expecting, but I think it wasn't what we got.
Yeah.
Which I think we were all pretty excited about.
And the musicians that you play with, they've been around for a while, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have a lot more experience under their belt. And
they're like cats.
Yeah. I mean, were you nervous to lead a band like that?
It's a funny place coming in and being like, okay, these are my songs and this is my project, but you guys know so much more than me and are, you know, in a lot of ways, such deeper musicians than I am. But, you know, it luckily just worked out where they were all so cool that I would play a song for them and they're like, okay, how about this? And they'd start playing and we're like, okay, let's hit record. And that's how we made like the first half of the record. And I was just so psyched to be having, you know, it sounded great to me. I'm like, yeah, sounds good. Let's keep going. You know, it was just, I wasn't expecting at any point soon at that point that I would have musicians like that playing my music. So it just, I went with it, you know.
What songs were out, had you written by that time?
Almost all of them. Yeah, almost all of them, except with the exception of maybe like three or four.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the sound that you've cultivated.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's some kind of country kind of steel thing that's happening. Did that exist for you before you hooked up with that band?
You know, I've always sang with a little bit of a twang. I don't know why. I don't know where it comes from. At one point when I was in college, I did have a little moment in Nashville working with this really awesome musician there.
I was going to ask if you spent time.
Yeah. Just writing with him a little bit. But then that was like a little like too country for me. Mm-hmm. So again, I kind of, it fizzled out for me. So I don't know. It's a little bit country. I don't know why.
But you also...
I love country music.
No, it's great. Yeah. You described it, I read somewhere, as indie pop rock with a country lean.
Yeah.
I love lean. I love country lean.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, because it's not... You wouldn't really...
Yeah, but because Dara's in a band that also describes themselves as indie pop sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And so now I wonder, like, if you guys can teach me about what makes something indie pop.
I mean, I think, like, honestly, I just started using that label because, like, it's pretty poppy, but you say pop to most people and they think Britney Spears.
Exactly.
You know, and it's not that.
Yeah, it's broader than we think it is, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a little bit roughed up, a little rougher than that.
I mean, there's just so many labels and labels on the labels and genres on genres.
What is a genre?
I don't know, and I think it's it's a tricky and almost unfair and confining thing to ask a musician to do it, even though it's natural and makes sense to do it. But I mean, I think because indie is like a really, I don't understand, you know.
Well, I think it's also one of those things where unless you're like setting out to, you know, cop some sort of sound, or like you're like, oh, I want to, I feel really inspired by this record, I'd love to make something that kind of had this sort of vibe, it's even harder to place. And when it's your own music, you're like, when I write these songs, I'm not like, oh, I'm gonna write a killer, you know, blues tune or whatever. I'm
right. I mean, are you conscious of that at all?
No, I'm just straight up singing whatever I get, you know what I mean? It's like you don't really get to choose.
There's a subgenre called sadcore.
Yeah,
like, which just like implies like a kind of emo, like shoegazy kind of, and alt country. Like, there's like alt everything. There's
I guess some people would call this record alt country,
right? And it does. It actually, well, on the one hand, it can be sort of annoying to be put in a box. It is sort of defining, and it does,
and it can
help,
be helpful,
and it can be helpful. So, I think the alt country, and I've heard you, or I don't know if it's you or if it's other people ascribing this to your music, but comparing it to like Alanis and Natalie Merchant, as opposed to more sort of more in the 2000s era, sort of like a Feister, Cat Power, who else, like the Weepies, I kind of think of Bird and the Bee. So it's like, I don't know, how is your music absorption happening these days? Do you, because Jesse and I were talking recently about, there's sort of a point at which an adult or young adult sort of hits the limit, and you sort of are just like stuck at a point of listening to your music that you know and that just speaks to you. And it's sort of, then you have to work a little bit harder to get the new stuff. And so I'm wondering if you feel this way of like, well, Natalie Merchant and Alanis and all of these people from maybe 10, 15 years ago are sort of what you still think of as part of your inspiration, or are you listening to brand new stuff all the time, and how do you get your new stuff?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm constantly listening to all different kinds of things, and new things, old things. My fiance is a jazz pianist. I see a lot of live jazz, like honestly, like sometimes four nights, five nights a week, because he plays in so many different bands. So I'm living in New York is amazing. There's so much music, but I'll go to see him play constantly. And a lot of times, you know, I'm seeing music that I otherwise wouldn't be, you know, checking out necessarily.
So are you becoming a jazz head now?
I can't say that because I'm like surrounded by real jazz heads, so no, but I really like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do I find, you know, people recommend things. You see things online, on blogs, and
there's not like one way.
Spotify, I hate to say it, Spotify can kind of lead you down some good rabbit holes of like, if you like this artist, you might like this artist, you know?
Is your album going to be on Spotify?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, okay, it is.
Yeah. In other words, you don't have any feelings, any strong emotions or feelings against
streaming services. At this point, you know, I kind of got to do what you got to do. Which
it's more pro
for me
than
feels
con,
like, I guess,
right?
Spotify. Yeah, at this point for me,
And
I'm a subscriber.
Yeah,
you know,
there you go.
I try to buy records with, you know, if there's something that I'm listening to a ton, I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy this one.
Yeah,
and we have a record player at home.
I was going to say, are you a vinyl person?
You know, yeah, I guess, yeah.
That's
I feel
okay.
Like everyone kind of is these days. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's like the Urban Outfitters kind, and then there's...
Well, I started off as that kind.
Yeah, okay.
In college.
Well, that was your gateway.
You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly,
right?
Exactly. It brought you to a good place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, are you starting a record label too?
Well, I mean, because it's technically an independent release, you kind of got to give it a label.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess.
Okay, Botanica Records, I read that. Is that... Okay.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay. Why not?
Congrats.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what does that mean exactly then?
You know, I don't really know.
Okay.
Honestly, I think it's just, it could go anywhere. You know, if at some point I do want to start signing artists to my label. I don't if I had the money at one point, which I don't currently have.
When you have the money.
Yeah, when I've got the money, I'm going to sign a whole bunch of artists to my label, Botanica Records.
So your team is self-distributing and
No, we're distributing through Sony Red.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we got some support and from a private investor too. So nice. We got a, you know, we were pretty fortunate just with the way things unfolded with this, where we got a lot of support behind it, and we have a big platform to release it on. Awesome. But I'm technically the person releasing it, so
yeah,
wow. Yeah, it's a great. Good situation.
And yeah, be your own boss.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah,
you had toured Europe last year, or was it the year before? So like you wrote all these songs, recorded them, and then...
Sorry, they're looking at me in there. So I wrote... I mean, we finished the record, and then the plan was to just like try and find a really good platform to release it on, and kind of shop it around a little bit. But in the meantime, I ended up on the Citizen Cope tour opening up all these dates. So that kind of got put on the back burner a little bit. And I ended up doing about like 30 dates.
Oh, so in Spain and Mexico, that was all
US. And then at one point I booked a show in Paris, and a really awesome show with this group called Club LFSM. It's like a women's geared music festival that they put on, but they also do shows, I think, once a month at this awesome venue there in Paris. So I booked that show and was like, all right, well, let's build a little bit of a tour around it. So I played some shows in Barcelona. Nice. Also, yeah.
So are you going back there for the new album?
Do you know yet? That's the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully at some
point. So it's going to be a crazy 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. I'll take it.
Good kind of crazy.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for taking us through that.
Yeah.
And now you're going to perform a song for us.
Oh,
right?
Okay. Yeah, I am.
What are you guys going to play?
We're going to play my song called Nothing to Lose.
Off of the new album, Chariot, which when this podcast posts, I think will be out. So now you can go listen to it, guys, and buy it and enjoy this performance. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. It was so great talking to you guys.
Father, help me please as I lay me down to sleep. I fear they'll take my soul before I wake. Shield me from disease, set my restless mind at ease. You got no clue what is at stake. And I went to the doctor just to see if he would tell me that everything was wrong. Cause strange things have shown themselves to me. Makes me wonder just how we might fare along. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.